some of the information that has been coming out in the last few months and some that will be presented at the neurology meetings in San Diego next week, things that haven't yet been addressed by so many of our wonderful speakers. I'm also going to talk about drugs that are available, things that we can do now for ataxia and the symptoms of ataxia. So I have my disclaimer that, you know, anything I say, obviously, you have to cross-check with your own doctors. And, you know, I have, you know, gotten research funding and support from a variety of organizations, but I'm not going to plug them necessarily, except for NAF. So, basic and clinical research in ataxia. You know, you do a search on PubMed, which is a, you know, a search engine we all use, and, you know, 30,000 articles dealing with ataxia going back to 1879. 374 in the past 3 months, and that's kind of recent and could be considered breaking news. 18 of those articles dealt with humans, but mostly, at least with the last 3 months, with the recessive ataxias. Over 9,000 articles dealing with ataxia treatment going back to 1882. Only 7 in the past 3 months pertaining to humans. One addressed B12 deficiency in a particularly interesting patient, and the other 6 addressed drugs that are used for various things that can cause ataxia. So not a lot of recent publication about treatments to help ataxia. I think the key thing about that avalanche, or apparent avalanche of information, is that in 1993, the triplet repeat brain disorders were first described, beginning with Huntington's disease. And followed very quickly by the dominant and inherited ataxias. When you look at it, and you know, on PubMed they have a nice little graph showing how many articles each year, and the graph looked a lot like this. So that, you know, from 1800 whatever up until 1990, it was kind of flat. There were a few new articles each year. Around the time that the triplet repeat mechanism was discovered, there was an exponential increase in the articles that came out. So the bulk of those articles are really in the last 20 years. If you go to clinicaltrials.gov and look up clinical trials for ataxia, 108 studies are listed. 77 of them are classified as interventional, where somebody actually was doing something to a patient with ataxia. 21 of them were still open, still operating, and many recruiting. The types of treatment trials that are still there and open, erythropoietin, EPI-743, and vitamin B3 and Friedreich's, deferiprone in Parkinson's disease, which I think is interesting because, you know, it's still being considered as something that might move forward in Friedreich's as well. IVIG in Joseph's disease, SCA3, Machado-Joseph's disease. Memantine in fragile X-tremor ataxia syndrome. Mesenchymal stem cells, and we've heard some talk about that already. Riluzole, dalfampridine, and immune therapies for paraneoplastic ataxia. So, you know, there certainly are a variety of treatment trials that are underway for genetic and non-genetic ataxia and related disorders. So, things that have not yet been presented, all these things we've heard about already, and we're going to hear about immune inflammatory causes of ataxia, specifically gluten ataxia, but not much else has yet been said about sporadic ataxia. So I'm hoping that at next year's meeting we'll have more that we can present and more that we can offer. So, 65th annual meeting of the American Academy of Neurology happening in San Diego starting today. There are 125 abstracts in the abstract book for posters and presentations about ataxia or imbalance. And an example is adapted tango dancing for Parkinson's disease can be safely delivered in the community-based setting. But there are other really good presentations that I think we're all looking forward to seeing. A number deal with the rare recessive ataxias. Some deal with acquired ataxias, toxic immune-mediated or due to a hidden cancer. There are a few dealing with better rating scales for monitoring ataxia, either cerebellar ataxia, fragile X, or multiple system atrophy. And there are a few drug trial results that are going to be featured. Resveratrol in Friedreich's, lithium in spinal cerebellar ataxia type 2 and 3, memantine in fragile X, IVIG in immune-mediated ataxia, and rifampicin in multiple system atrophy. So let's look at least what the abstracts tell us. Obviously, you know, when at the meetings there's going to be posters, there'll be more detailed discussion. So the open-label pilot study of resveratrol for Friedreich's ataxia, done by Martin Delaticchi's group in Australia. 27 participants were enrolled in an open-label pilot study, so everybody got the resveratrol. And Dave Lynch has informed me that it's not the resveratrol that you can get online, that it's a special, detailed, formulated, purified form of resveratrol. 13 of the participants received what's considered low dose, 1 gram per day, 1,000 milligrams per day, and 14 received high dose, which was 5 times that, 5 grams per day. Preliminary analysis of the data suggests that the high dose treatment, carried on for 12 weeks, did improve some clinical and biological markers of Friedreich's. There were some GI side effects, and a placebo-controlled study of more patients is required to assess whether it's going to be clinically relevant for Friedreich's. And this, I think, is going to be a recurring theme, that you know, some of the early publications, you know, the early studies that are finally making it into the literature, the final sentence is always, larger placebo-controlled studies need to be done. So we still don't yet have anything in hand that we can take to market, as it were. Lithium. Is this disease modifying for spinal cerebellar ataxia? There was a phase 1 study or a phase 1/2 study done of lithium for SCA1. There are 2 additional lithium studies that are being presented, one in SCA2 and one in SCA3, Machado-Joseph's disease. In the SCA2 study, 9 of 17 participants received lithium and the others received placebo at what's considered a therapeutic dose, the same dose that's used for psychiatric issues. They took it for almost a year. It was well tolerated. Side effects were similar to what you would get, you know, if you were taking it for bipolar disorder. And some of the endpoints did suggest that there was some improvement. But again, you know, a phase 3 study, you know, more patients was really needed to assess if it's going to be disease modifying in SCA2. Similarly, in a phase 2-3 study in Machado-Joseph's disease, SCA3, 31 of 62 enrolled participants received lithium and the others received placebo. They took it for a year. And this also provided evidence that it was safe. 50% of the subjects had side effects. And interim results do suggest that it seemed to slow progression. But again, need larger studies to really confirm that. Memantine in Fragile X Tremor Ataxia Syndrome. Fragile X is a relatively newly described cause of ataxia, usually in older men, or grandfathers of children with Fragile X mental retardation. So it's a form of that disease where there's what's called a premutation or a smaller mutation that doesn't cause mental retardation in the men who are carrying that defective X chromosome, but in their later years it can cause ataxia, tremor, some cognitive problems. So memantine is a drug that's approved for use in Alzheimer's disease, number one, to improve memory and thinking, and number two, it may be neuroprotective because of its effects on the NMDA receptor. So they did this study, I think, in part to see if it would help some of the cognitive issues that some of these patients have. And they did find some improvement.